The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
If you like this show, you should check out In Case You Missed It, Slate's podcast about internet culture. It's a show for people who have a healthy relationship with the internet, made by people who really, really don't. It's hosted by Slate's Rachel Hampton. Twice a week, she explores what's trending at the top of your feeds, investigates the ghost of internet past, and helps you sound like the smartest person in your group chat. Episodes drop every Wednesday and Saturday. Search ICYMI wherever you get your podcast. That's ICYMI, the podcast that's extremely online, so you don't have to be.
Are we recording?
I think we're recording now.
Okay.
Wait,
do you guys know that my first time having, I'm not even just saying this, it just came into my brain. My first time having an Uncrustable was actually 2 days ago. In my whole life, I was afraid of jam. Or is it jelly?
It's jelly.
It's
fake
jelly.
Wait, so you watched me eat them 4 times a week?
And I never knew why. And now I eat them for dinner every single night. It's the only thing in my fridge.
So your nutrition.
So now you understand my addiction.
Well, okay. The nutrition aspect of that for dinner.
Yeah, you do.
What do you eat during the day?
Anyway, okay. So how are you guys doing?
Okay, good morning.
But you understand my addiction now, right? Fun fact, our crafty guy banned me from getting them on a daily basis. I wish I was kidding.
But why?
Because he was worried about my health. Because I would have one every single day. And then sometimes two a day if it was a rough day.
Speaking of eating, we did so much of that in Puerto Rico. this past week.
That was such a seamless segue.
That was really good.
When I was visiting Alicia in Puerto Rico and I became.
The accent comes out.
You sound like one of those white people that go to a foreign country for the first time.
I became a Puerto Rican queen. I now have a playlist called Aircon.
Why aircon?
What does that mean?
Because you need to have air conditioning in Puerto Rico and it's all Puerto Rican music. And yes, every song is Bad Bunny.
Well, oh, good. Well, like Bad Bunny, you know, he was on another date with Kendall Jenner last night.
I can't talk about it. Moment of silence. Anyways, El Conejo Malo, like, I knew people were obsessed with him, but being in Puerto Rico, like, they are injecting him, like, in their veins. You can't go to a coffee shop. You cannot go to a club.
Without...
Like, you just hear him at all times.
I did feel like I fit in very well in Puerto Rico. Do you not agree?
Do you want like a seal of approval? Like,
I'm just saying, do you not
what
agree?
Does that even mean? As an Afro-Latina, what are your thoughts on me being?
No, but I genuinely, I love spending time with you. I love celebrating you on your beautiful show with your beautiful castmates who are so lovely and so kind. And I just also love, everything that we did together.
I hope you know, like, I couldn't be more grateful for you. It was so special. We did have the best trip. And yes, Josie fit in very well in Puerto Rico.
I will just be honest right now and say the trips that you guys have had together, I have such FOMO.
Stop.
I have such FOMO. If I could just leave everything and all the commitments I have behind and travel with you guys, I would.
We love you. And you're with us in spirit.
We do like
it.
Anyway, I'm so excited today because I have one of my favorite people in the room right now who you guys have both met.
Speaking of birthday trips.
Yes, she just had her birthday trip in Mexico City. One of the most talented actresses that I know. She's going to get really uncomfortable that I'm saying this. Literally one of the most beautiful people I've literally ever met and someone who I've grown to love over the past year and I feel like gotten close with and I'm just honored to live life with is the queen herself, Alicia Beau.
Hello.
Welcome to the pod.
What an intro. That was amazing. Thank you.
A little sap.
Huh?
A little sap. But
yeah, I love it. Should I go for you too?
No, please don't.
Josie and Tota.
Literally gonna.
Let me count the ways I love you. Wow. Me and Josie spent 8 months in Edinburgh, Scotland together in a corset in the freezing cold.
Hot.
And living in basically dorms.
Yes.
With a bunch of college kids.
With only cool toned materials.
Yeah, it was like living inside of an IKEA.
It was.
Scandinavian dream.
Yeah, literally. And I don't think I could have survived that time without Josie. It was my first time working outside of the country.
Oh, same.
For an extended amount of time. I mean, like, you know, it's just when you have to leave all of your friends and family behind.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Like, you know, acting, like, sure, can be glamorous sometimes, but also most of the time it's just a lot of hotel rooms, you're alone, you don't really know anyone, who knows if, like, you're going to make, like, close, like, bonds or relationships with who you're working with. But thank God I had you, because honestly, you were, like, my safe space that whole time. I think I would have gone crazy without you.
Same. So. I feel the same. I literally love you. Okay, I'm done. But I think that you mentioned something really important, which is that, yeah, that was both of our first times going outside of the country. And I think that is such a big change.
Work. Well, you've been outside of the country. Wait, had you been outside
of
the country?
Well, no, for a project.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But speaking of... But going across the country, especially from, you did the opposite when you were born.
Oh, right.
Because you were born in Europe. You were born in Norway, which I feel like a lot of people don't know about you, even though I feel like you've talked about it.
Really?
In a lot
I
of
feel
interviews.
Like that's my whole personality trait is be like, hi, I'm Alicia. I was born in Norway. You
I'm an immigrant,
guess,
actually.
Like, you know
but
that.
But weirdly, people
I'm actually
like,
different.
Didn't, you guys didn't know.
That's I didn't know. Oh, I was just going to say, it's definitely not your whole personality because I have no idea.
Really? Because I always feel like I always... Oh, yeah. Well, hello. My name's Alicia.
Okay.
I was born in Norway.
Incredible. Welcome to America.
Thank you. Tusen takk. I'm half Norwegian, half Somali. And my mom and I moved from Oslo to Los Angeles when I was 7 because she met a man.
Okay.
My stepfather,
okay,
American, and then we were like Oslo, 8 months of winter, LA, like, you know, sunshine. Yeah. So
the
we
choice
made,
was made.
Yeah, we yeah. made the big
mom
migration.
Isn't Norwegian.
She is Norwegian.
Oh, okay, but she moved there.
No. My
mom. She moved to here because she met a man.
She moved to LA, Los Angeles because she met a man.
Understood.
My mom is super Norwegian, generations.
Okay, that's
of
what
Norwegians.
I thought.
Yes.
Okay.
And my dad. Was born in Somalia and then there was the war, the civil war in the 90s and late 80s, and he escaped the war. And at 17 years old, he was adopted by a Norwegian who he had met a couple of years prior, just like showing him around Mogadishu.
Wow.
And then he was in a bit of trouble escaping the war. He called up my grandpa now and said I really need help, and my grandpa went over and adopted him and brought him to Norway and raised him as his own.
Wow.
Yeah. And then 5-6 years later he met my mom and, you know, had me.
Wow, that's for a second I thought you were saying that your mom's dad adopted him and I was like, that is so strange. But so just a man adopted him who
Yes.
Okay.
That would have been crazy. Is that legal? Like, could
I
you?
Wouldn't that have been iconic, though?
I think that's so special. I didn't know your dad was adopted. My older siblings are adopted.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my mom adopted them when I was like a baby.
Oh, wow.
So that is so cool.
How many siblings do you have?
Ooh, girl, too many to count.
Really?
It's a real blended family. There's, I think, some I don't know about, but it's okay.
Yeah. I have a couple I don't know about either.
It's
so.
Okay. Wait, so
speaking of family, you're... Mom had married your stepfather, and then you were here at 7 years old. And then did you guys just stayed in LA?
Yeah.
And you've been here ever since?
Yeah, ever since. So I'm a Valley girl through and through, really.
Okay.
Where in the Valley?
I grew up in West Hills, Canoga Park area.
Yes.
Went to El Camino, if anyone knows it.
Okay. Yeah. No.
Not one person
cool.
here.
Not one.
Yeah.
But we
respect
but we live
it.
In Valley.
Okay,
but,
incredible.
Yeah, deep. It was one of those things where it's so deep in the Valley that I think it might... I'm probably wrong, but I think Woodland Hills might be the end of the west side of San Fernando Valley. And then by that point, it was like a 20-minute drive over Malibu Canyon. And that's how I spent like all my summers where there was this Dollar Beach bus.
No
that
way.
Would pick us up in Calabasas High School.
Real bougie, I love
it. Yeah, in the parking lot. And then all of these teenagers would just hop on this bus and we'd go to Tower 7 at Zuma Beach. And it was, I hated where I grew up when I was, you know, growing up because I'm like, ugh, it's so boring. But looking back, it was literally like I don't know, Fast Times at Ridgemont High or something. Mm, it was such a, it was a quiet,
like quintessential,
very quintessential experience. Californian, you know, all of the parents were probably like ex-hippies from Topanga Canyon or something.
Wow.
So it was an interesting thing.
I love that.
And you talk about like coming to America, and you said that your mom saw you like doing like cartwheels and like jumping up and down
getting
here.
Oh, I love you for remembering that.
What do you think the first thing that you saw here was the most jarring compared to Norway that really stood out to you?
That's a really good question. You know what? I think it was, I mean, obviously the vast landscapes and how empty the streets are, really. Because I also is a metropolitan city, and you can, you know, walk around and be self-sufficient. The second I moved to the valley, which is very spread out, I wasn't allowed to walk down the street by myself. And I was used to being able, there was a 7-Eleven I lived by. I lived in front of the 101 freeway behind Ventura Boulevard in like an apartment complex. And there was a 7-Eleven on that corner. And when I was a child, like 5-6 years old, my mom would send me to the corner shop in Norway to like get her stuff.
Yeah, go pick up a chocolate bar or something.
Yeah, I'd walk to school, to kindergarten, which is wild to think about.
Yeah.
When you grew up in America. And I wasn't allowed to do that anymore. And I just felt like a little part of my freedom had been taken away.
Because it's so childhood independence.
Yeah, like I couldn't take my bike around. And that was the biggest thing. But other than that, it was just the heat. Mm-hmm. Woodland Hills,
horrific.
West Hills, Canoga Park is like the hottest area in LA. I would have heat strokes three times a week.
Yes.
Because my body wasn't
used to it. Do you have
really? Like a sweating problem?
Not anymore, no.
Oh. How did you get rid of that? How did you get rid of that? Because I'm still
not like
that
you.
Out.
No.
Like, my body temperature runs at like 190 degrees.
Oh, yeah. But
baseline.
You know what? I have night sweats. I will wake up.
I don't have night sweats.
I wake up and I'm like, did I pee?
Because the bed
is soaking
wet. It is.
Damn. And I don't know what that's about. I hope that's not an underlying health
issue. We could talk about that because my scalp, I was thinking about getting Botox on my head because it paralyzes the muscle. Yeah. But then I like went for a consultation. They're like, yeah, it's around like 300 pokes.
Oh,
and I was like, listen,
no. And
it's only lasts for like 4 to 6 months.
No,
said, I'd rather just sweat and put my hair in a sleek bun, snatch, and have it sweat than have 300 needles every 4 to 6 months.
Yeah, it's like that look is good. It's like a Bella Hadid.
It's
like
a Bella Hadid snatch.
Yeah, like, it's so
I love
chic.
It. I need a little bit more oil in my dry hair.
My hair is falling out and so dry and brittle and gross.
And that's the LA heat.
Yeah.
The LA heat will do that to you.
Yeah.
And Norwegian was your first. Is that the
Oh my gosh,
your
yeah.
first language?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I didn't speak any English when I came to America. I had a thick Scandinavian accent. Norwegian was my first language, and I completely forgot my first language.
Mm.
And in forgetting my language, you know, you kind of lose a part of your identity because my whole family still lives there.
Mm.
And so we've been going back. I mean, we go back every Christmas, at least once a year. And I mean, there is a huge disconnect because it's such a big part of my identity. But then culturally, because I don't speak the language anymore, there is this this disconnect. But I mean, I've been saying for years now that I'm going to relearn it. And it's one of those things. It's such a small language. And it's hard to find tutors.
Yeah.
It's hard.
I know what you're saying, though, because I feel like once you, like, I knew Arabic growing up, and then I lost it all. And then
did
I,
you? Oh,
yeah.
I
so, like,
that.
And then I'm trying to get back into it now. Like, I took Arabic in college, and it's so much harder. But no matter what, there is still that memory ingrained in your head.
Yeah. There's certain things that I still remember and can comprehend when my family are speaking.
Yes.
And the only problem is that my family is from this town called Trondheim, which is like a little bit more north of Oslo.
Okay.
And Oslo, and they have completely different dialects.
Mm.
I remember getting into arguments with my cousin because, like, let's say in when you're speaking the Oslo dialect, you would say for the number 7, you would say Siv, and my cousin says Shu. So it's like these crazy different pronunciations. And we'd be like, I don't know what you're saying. Like, you're not speaking the language correctly.
Yeah, when, please.
So when I go back, I'm listening to my family speak this different dialect that I didn't grow up speaking. Because
so it's even more, it's like double confusing.
Yes, exactly. But yeah. But we just did a show for, the show that we worked on together. We worked with Christine Froseth, who is super Norwegian,
also Norwegian
and from the same area that I grew up in. And I didn't utilize her. I didn't.
Once in a while, you guys would try.
But then she'd just get frustrated because she's like, oh, gosh, I can't
It's the way you said, I didn't utilize her. Yeah. That's what got me.
She does speak it really well.
Well, she's fully, like, both her parents are Norwegian. She's been back and forth.
Yeah.
She's very Norwegian.
From Jersey to...
Jersey Norwegian girl. Yeah.
Which is iconic.
Hey guys, before we go to break, we're really excited to be included in Apple Podcasts Women's History Month collection, celebrating the past and present legacy of self-identifying women. The collection has essential conversations for and by women, while centering and celebrating intersectionality. We're grateful to be included in the collection and hope that you enjoy the conversation offered here today. You obviously like talked about your connection to your Norwegian culture. Like, how did you navigate like being this young Black Norwegian girl like coming to LA?
Because Somali
and Black. Because I know like specifically for me, I think I'm perceived differently depending on what country I'm in. So like, have you experienced that? Also, being in Scotland, how was that?
Yeah.
I feel like I asked you a bunch of questions. You choose.
I got you. I'll answer all of them. You know what's actually so funny about moving from Oslo to Los Angeles is that my school in Oslo was way more diverse than the school I went to in LA.
Really?
Because I was living in a place where there was a lot of immigrants in this place called Sinsen, which is a lot of Somali, a lot of like Middle Eastern people. Mm. There were two fully Norwegian girls in my class. Everyone else were people who looked like me or from different places, just immigrants really. And I moved to probably the whitest place in the valley, I think.
Yep.
And I was maybe one of five Black kids in my elementary school. And you know, the culture of being Black in America, in the United States of America, is United States of America. Sorry.
That was crazy.
So formal.
Yes.
Yeah,
I
was like,
I know.
America.
But it's completely different from being African, which I was used to with my dad. Just, you know, African culture is just different from, you know, African-American culture.
Yeah.
And when I moved here, I quickly realized that there were certain ways I was meant to act to other people to make them feel more comfortable and be like, no, you're Black. You're supposed to be acting like this way. Mm. You're supposed to be acting like this. And I was just so confused. I was a child. And it was, you know, it was racist. Like kids were inherently racist because of, you know, generationally, culturally, how they grew up. And it was... I felt really insecure. I felt othered. I felt like I wanted to conform, as any kid wanted to do. Didn't want an accent. I didn't want to look too different. I didn't want to, you know, I wanted straight hair. You know, I wanted to just conform, which is so heartbreaking, really. And it was hard trying to fit in because I felt like I couldn't really fit in anywhere in that way. And then... speaking to being like just going to different countries, there is something that I realized the older I get is that I actually have to think about, you know, as you know, I think everyone sitting on this couch actually has to think about if we're going to be safe in a certain country or even a state in America. And I dated an Italian.
The Italian.
two pasta recipes.
Yes. No, Josie's just heard so much about it because I learned how to cook pasta and I only know how to make it for two people. And it always ended with like, because I dated an Italian guy for a couple of
but
years.
But that's fun. That's fun to say. What's it? Because I dated an Italian.
Yeah, just so you know, because like I know authentic. What Chianti wine is because.
Right.
Chianti,
I know every she's time culture. I see Chianti on a menu, I think of you.
Yeah, literally.
You're like, she's culture. All the different period. Types of pasta. There's linguine, rigatoni. Yes,
like, and also this isn't actually Italian. This is Italian American. Yeah, and people in Italy don't actually eat meatballs with
and
their spaghetti.
And do you know why? Because I had
dated an Italian.
The pasta water al dente four times in a row.
Let me bring it down real bad. I never felt more...
She said, let me take a hard shift. You're like, all right, so going there.
I've never felt more othered and attacked.
Oh, gosh.
And then I... had felt in Rome when I spent my pandemic months in Rome.
Oh, wow. Gosh.
And I...
With the Italian boyfriend.
With the Italian boyfriend. I had never, which was so interesting because I was in Italy and I'd spent time in the deep south before and I was expecting to feel, you know, it was just an unexpected place. Like we were in a restaurant for my birthday and all of these older Italian women were looking at me with this pure, sheer disgust that your gut feeling knows, like, oh my God, they're looking at me because I'm of the way I look and because I'm black, and how dare I be in this restaurant. I remember going to the bathroom and this woman didn't want to wash her hands after me. Like, it was like I'd been, it was something I read in history books of like, oh my gosh, we're not experiencing this in 2023, 2020 when it was. But like, it was jarring. It was scary. And in Scotland, we were doing a period drama. So we'd have to spend a lot of times in these stately homes that go back to like the 17th, 18th century. And the memorabilia there is just, you know, the history of the world. There was one location where there was
Gollywog.
Yeah, that's how it's called. Yeah. Gollywog.
Which and is like, it sounds racist.
It sounds so.
It's
and
a
it was,
racist toy.
It's a racist
that
doll.
They used to play with.
Mm-hmm. It's like blackface, basically. And it was just.
Like a minstrelsy toy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was. And, you know, it's just. Yeah, so it's strange. It's kind of all over. Yeah, it's a strange thing navigating in this world. Yeah.
Based on environment. And specifically when you were living in Italy, that was not just any time. It was the summer of 2020.
Yes.
And it was so turbulent. And I feel like for so many people here, obviously, especially black people that were living in LA, were experiencing such a visceral time that you can obviously attest to more than I can. I can't even imagine being isolated away from community.
Yeah.
Because I think that was something that you speak about a lot.
I say it all the time. Like, I think that was one of the most difficult years of my life. And mind you, I want to decenter myself from the conversation. Like, the people who were on the ground every single day creating mutual aid funds and literally having their life at risk on a daily basis in very aggressive ways, those are the people that I think will deal with the repercussions of that time more so than someone like me. Like,
absolutely.
Yes, I protested and engaged in activism, but all that goes to say, even though it was a super disheartening, difficult time here in America, and I think for black folk across the country, across the diaspora, one of the only reasons that I think I was okay and I survived was because of community and camaraderie. Mm. And that is what I was thinking of the whole time of you talking. Like, I was like, one, how awful, and thank you for sharing, but two, you had to do that without other like black people around you or like without your community, like, and camaraderie. Like, how have you found that, like, on set or when you're alone? Like, you talked about the solitude that comes with acting and how it's not as glamorous as people think. Mm-hmm. How have you found community, like, in your blackness and just like as a woman? Like, how have you found like your peace on set while working and navigating acting, whatever this crazy world is?
Oh, wow. That's a good question because I'm still finding it. I still, to this day, find myself being maybe one of two people who are of color on the set that I'm on, and I find that I find myself being a bit upset that it's up to me most of the time to have to speak up for myself where I shouldn't have to.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful for when I have people that I'm working with that recognize that and speak up for me, because it's tiring, and it's unfair, because I think as much as this industry likes to say that, you know, we are changing and it's getting better, it's just untrue, really.
100%.
It's tokenism at best. And there is, I mean, there's so much black talent in this industry. And, you know, when it's when they're behind the scenes, like, you know, when you're watching a television show, like, oh, this is real.
This is sincere. Authentic.
And this is authentic. And those are the projects I want to be a part of. But it's been, with my career so far, the shows and movies I've been on, you can just, you know, look, I'm usually the one black girl in it, or one of three, maybe, or one of two. But, like, you know, they're predominantly, you know, white stories that I'm supporting, I guess. That's not to say that I've had really great characters with great arcs, but that's just the reality of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm still navigating it. I'm still, you know, trying to figure out how I can. It's also building my own confidence as a woman in a business sense, and how to advocate for myself. And it's something that I haven't perfected yet, but it's a learning experience. And it's just, I think it's important, you know, like when you meet people like Josie, who will stand up for you no matter what, which is honestly, like, maybe one of the first times I've had someone do it so visibly for me. Josie's just stood up for me a lot in the work sense, even, and it obviously in my personal life. So seeing that made it clear to me that I need, or it made it clear to me that it's not really my responsibility all the time.
Yeah, it's not.
No. Like, I shouldn't have to be caught. It's exhausting.
I think there's a fine line, because yes, always advocate for yourself, but at some point that is not, educating people, checking people, it is not your responsibility.
Exactly.
It is the people around you who are not going through your experience to stand by you and stand with you.
I remember having a conversation with you. We were in the drive back from, like, one of the first pre-production days where they threw us in a lake, and it was like 20 degree lake, Fahrenheit lake, and we were in wetsuits.
Yeah.
And they had to see how long we could, like,
last.
It's
like an episode of Survivor when we're repeating it, because that's
wild. They bust us
all. Wait, let's back.
We never spoke about that day after that.
Let's explain this. Yeah. There was a scene that we had to shoot where we all had to jump into a real, like, waterfall lake. And so basically they had to test how long each of us could last in a lake to see who would go in the lake, right?
Yeah,
for the longest. So they had to approve it.
You guys wouldn't get injured.
Yeah, it was
the most cold water
that I'd ever been in. But, like, basically they were timing us while we're all in a lake with wetsuits on the day we're not wearing wetsuits. But they were like, okay, Alicia could last 30 seconds. Josie could last 40 seconds. And they're like, okay.
You could last 40?
I don't remember.
Well, to be fair, I was in there the longest out of all the girls. They did tell me that.
Oh, my God.
Okay, I did swim around.
Okay, settle.
But the boys were like, insane. They were Olympians. Except.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh,
they're disrespectful.
You guys have to say it now, but don't say it. But
no, don't say it.
But there were no boys in our cast.
You know, we didn't work.
Boys, what?
We did not work with any boys.
Yeah.
But I remember being in the car ride home and speaking to you, and we stopped by to see some cows with our driver. Do you remember his name?
No, but he was so lovely.
Anyway.
Stuart.
Oh, yeah. Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
I'm awful. Your driver. Well, he was your driver. To be fair,
not my driver.
Who was your driver? Oh, yeah. Rat, right?
Rat?
You had Rat.
I had a driver named Rat. But David, Little David would drive me a lot. And then
I had Kevin
loved
and Ian.
The days when Ian would drive me.
Ian drove you in the beginning.
Yeah. I love you.
And then I had him.
I love Rat.
Yeah, Rat.
I don't know why, but I stand with Rat.
Rat is a cool guy.
And then David, Little David and Big David.
Yeah. I love them all.
I love them all, too. I don't know why.
Shout out to all the drivers. Yeah.
That was just to test our brains. Yeah. Wait, but anyway.
What did we say in the car, Josie?
I know. I'm awful. I don't know how to tell a story. But in the car, I literally said to you, I was like, you are going to have a very different experience than we are. And this is in the very beginning. Christine was in the car as well. And I was like, people are probably going to say shit to you, and it's not going to be fair, and it's not going to be right, but it is our job to speak up about it, ours and mine and Christine's, and it's not yours, and, like, lean on us, but know that, like, we're not looking at this with rose-colored lenses either, and maybe you weren't in the beginning, maybe you weren't expecting it to be as whatever you made it out to be. I don't want to speak for you. But I think, like, there were certain moments where there are just ignorances. And it was never, not always malintentioned, but I could just feel you not necessarily knowing how to go about certain things because of the compassionate, kind person that you are. And also just the environment that you were in was just so predominantly white. And like, and no one was really, not many people really cared.
Yeah, because thank you so much. I remember that conversation, and it was no one had ever done that for me ever before on a set ever. So to feel protected by you it was the most meaningful thing ever. I felt safe even when I was feeling uncomfortable or feeling lonely. I knew that I had you and that it would never be too much. So thank you. Oh, that's so sweet.
I love you.
The problem was twofold, because you're dealing with race and you're dealing with cultural differences. Mm. And it's just, yeah, I mean, not to, I mean, I had a great time in the UK. People are nice. They are really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's
but
just
truths can exist.
Yeah, at the same time. Yeah. And yeah, it's just interesting to reflect on, because it's strange living in a place where nobody looks like you. But then I'd go to London and I lived in the Somali central of the world.
Right.
And it was just...
everybody was Somali.
Everyone was Somali. Yeah.
Somali.
Yeah.
I cannot.
So please. Like, it's... that was amazing, because I'd never been around so many Somali people, like, for, like, in that... in a very, very, very long time.
Yeah.
And also there's a small community, but in London, there's so many Eastern Africans.
There's so many.
And I loved it.
In Scotland, there was little pockets.
If
you go to Glasgow, I feel like.
Yeah, we spent most of our time in a very posh Edinburgh,
but I loved Glasgow. And also, you I don't want to keep talking about this one show, but like, you did an incredible job. Like, you were one of the leads of our show, and like, we're so talented, and like, your arc is beautiful, and every time I watch a new DR, I think it's so stunning. And
thanks.
The last thing that I'm gonna say is that you were there for me too as well. Like, it does go both ways.
Oh,
I do want
you
to know that. Like, I'm not trying to be just keep it melodramatic or whatever, but I'm being serious. Like, there, and I spoke to Alicia
Josie
about this,
speak
like
about people the way she speaks about you. She's very kind, but she's one of the most truthful people I've ever met. And when she spoke about you, and I was so excited to like meet your lovely cast, like, I knew how special you were just because of like how Josie speaks about
you. She FaceTiming her, and you know, it's like also as a best friend, but also like as like an older sister type thing, you know. It's very I was not worried, but concerned for her going away for 8 months in a new place. And I remember she was telling me, you and Emmy, but like, you were her rock during this time.
Yeah.
And all I can say is thank you for doing that, like, as a best friend, like, truly, because it's a scary place going to a foreign country, not knowing what you're doing for work, too, as a young adult as well.
Yeah.
This town, we don't know, we don't have any trans people that are that close to us. That is just like the fact of the matter in our life. Like, we have beautiful trans people in our lives that we love and we look up to, and MJ and India and all of these people that we see at events,
but they're a little bit older
than us, and they have their own communities and they have their own lives. And like, so not to say that trans people don't exist in Los Angeles, they certainly do, but certainly in our circles, I'm the only one. And I think, like, obviously, you're not trans. I'm like outing you as trans. You're not trans.
I am.
Yes, you are. You're not trans. But like, I just like, I struggled a lot, like, in the summer. And I just remember like having breakfast with you, and I was like crying to you about something. And you're like, I don't remember this. But I felt so.
Shut the fuck up. No, no, no. So annoying, yo.
I'm not kidding. But I get so uncomfortable talking about that stuff. But like, I don't know how to explain it other than to say is like, I just felt seen by you, and I felt like you, and we're going to talk about positive things after this, but I do feel like you felt my pain and you felt like my otherness.
Mm.
And even though we have very different experiences, I'm not black, you are not trans yet. I did feel like we connected in that way, and it and it made me feel like I was going to be okay. Yeah. And I do not know if I would have lasted without that.
I feel exactly the same. Absolutely. I love you so much.
I'm so proud of you for many reasons, not only for this show, but the movie that just came out, who our producer, Fiona, did you see it?
Or,
yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, thank you so much.
They told us awesome things about that. And this was your first project after 13 Reasons Why, right?
Oh, yes, yes.
Because this was before Due Revenge, right?
Yes. It was, we wrapped 13 Reasons Why December 2019. And we knew it was going to be the last season. We were ready. We were like, okay, great. We told... It was 4 seasons. We told a story.
Yeah.
Now it's time to graduate. How old was I? I think I was 20, 21. I was 22 years old when the show ended. And I'm 26 now.
Which is crazy because you booked the show when you were 19.
Yeah.
That's insane. Your first acting role?
Like, not my first acting role, but my first series regular, big role,
incredible.
I would say. Yeah. And I was 19. Intense show, to say the least.
Yeah.
Babe.
Yeah, it was so we finished the show December 2019 and then COVID happened, of course. I went to go to Italy with my Italian boyfriend.
Okay, incredible.
At the time.
I love how he's honestly a co-host on this podcast.
No, like he's
we
right
should give
here.
Him a producer's credit. Hope he's well.
And me too. Who knows?
Yeah.
Then I went March 6th, which is my birthday. And then, obviously, Italy was one of the countries that got hit the worst.
Yeah.
So...
But you guys were singing on patios.
Yeah, it was a beautiful experience.
You guys were a lot cuter than us. We were losing our shit here.
Yeah.
People got real nasty. No, it was... And ratchet.
That's when we all moved in together.
Oh yeah.
My God.
It was crazy.
We saw the best and the worst real quick.
Like, I want to know about the arguments. I want to know about...
Ooh.
Oh, there are so many.
I would like to say that I was never in an argument.
Oh, girl, you better.
The argument
the
was
receipts
never
are about to come.
Between us. Who was I arguing with?
Go on. Let's hear it.
So we were losing our shit, but also falling in love. You were in Italy. And how long did you stay there before you worked on a project?
So I got stuck there and then also chose to stay there.
Yeah.
And I was there for 6 months. And me and my boyfriend, that ex-boyfriend that I had only been together with for 6 months at the time, spent the other 6 months together in quarantine.
What?
That is a pandemic relationship.
I'm sorry, that is a gay relationship.
Shut up.
That is gay.
That is lesbian.
She's gay in her relationship.
That is so U-Haul of you.
Yeah, I know.
You know what? You committed. You said, I got this, boo.
I know. And then... Anyway, I left. I went back home in September. I was going crazy. Couldn't get work. I hadn't read a script in so long. And then I got this gig in When You Finish Saving the World. And we filmed that in January in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
And Jesse Eisenberg directed?
Yes. Yeah, so Jesse Eisenberg directed it. I played Finn Wolfhard's lover.
I'm pissing at that. Him just turning 18 or something.
It.
How old is he?
No, he literally turned just 18. I was apprehensive to do it because I was 23 then at the time. And I'm like, Finn, everyone, Finn is, he's so tall now. But at that time, I'm like, maybe someone who's maybe closer to Finn's age should play this role. Just so it makes sense a little bit in my head. But then I spoke with Jesse and it made sense when he watched the film. I meant to remind him of his mother, who's played by Julianne Moore. And he has this crush on my character. I play this character named Lila. And it's like this push and pull weird relationship where I'm like, oh, you have all this passion and charisma, but it's all like just in the wrong places and you're kind of cringy. And I kind of like, oh gosh, he's like an annoying little brother. And that's how our dynamic is meant to play on screen. And I'm like, so I took it. And also we don't kiss or anything in the movie, so it's
you said disclaimer.
There's no licorice pizza.
There's no Jennifer Lawrence going.
I'm just gonna say because the only reason why I was apprehensive is because I've been 17 years old having to kiss like a 36 year old man,
Shit.
And it's
I'm so sorry
for a movie.
Which project?
For well, so I did a movie with Matthew Gray Gubler when I was I was 19.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's legal.
It's fine.
That's
that was fine.
Okay,
but
yeah,
I'm just saying.
Right. But that you can do that. No, I think there's a certain amount of gap when you're under 18.
No, no, no. I was of age because it was 2016. Okay. I was 19
you're like,
years old.
I was 12 years old having to hang out with Matthew
Gray
Gubler.
Yeah, you were like, I was
in the back of a Volvo.
Yeah. But it's just, and it's just, you know, I feel like when you, there, age gaps in Hollywood are kind of like, they're too
normalized.
They're too normalized.
They're romanticized.
It's also very much like, I feel like everyone has like dated someone who's been over the age of 30 and you're like just turned 20.
Yes.
Where it's, and it's like, I
the
mean,
grooming is real.
The grooming
here
is
in
real.
LA.
Also, the, I'm all for like love, you can't control love or whatever the fuck that's called, but what you can't control is the power dynamic that's happening.
Yes.
And you, like you see Leonardo DiCaprio and his like under 25 girls.
Yes.
And like all these rappers dating younger girls.
Yes.
It's just very, very odd.
Yeah. And you know, it makes you look twice.
Absolutely.
It makes you,
yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to think about because then you also meet like parents who are 10, 15 years apart. You
yeah.
know, we're like, oh, they.
And that makes sense.
And
yeah.
they're like, oh my gosh, you know, this seems good. But then it's the power dynamic that shifts it. And I just think also on television and movies, I mean, especially with women, I guess so. Like women always have to be super young and the men, I guess, have this thing where they become more handsome the more.
Yeah, the gray wolf.
The ageism
Daniel Craig
is so real.
And George Clooney. And like we're okay with just seeing them with 22-year-old girls. And you know, it's just, it's
like
misogynistic. It's so misogynistic because when women aren't allowed to age gracefully or anything.
No, God forbid we age.
Like, oh my gosh, Emilia Clarke's Instagram photo blew up because some people were like, wow, she looks her age. And people are
God
being
forbid.
So disrespectful.
Yes. God forbid.
She's one of the most beautiful women
Human
stunning.
Ever.
And the same thing happened with Hillary Duff. Like,
oh,
wasn't there an
gosh.
Ad that was like, can you believe it? Like 37 or something like that. It's like, why are we fixating on people's age?
And they're always
wait,
like,
actually, I will say I did see some comments about me, just to making it about myself.
Yeah. You should. Please make it about you.
Because going back to when you finished Saving the World, it came out. And like, I think, I mean, most of the fans of, I think mostly Finn, they were like, this old woman, how, like she's still
Are
playing.
Are you serious?
She's still
Jesus
playing.
Christ.
Like she's in high school. I'm like, wait a minute. Aren't all the Euphoria kids my age? And that's like everyone.
I literally fixed your mouth. Nina Dobrev was 25 playing a 14-year-old season
one.
I was
like, I feel like I'm 45 years old.
I was
50
on
years
Glee
old.
Where it was like on AARP live. And I was the only child
I'm
there.
Like, I'm kind of like the
everyone was in their 30s.
Is my age playing high school
people
or
are,
older.
Also, by the way, you have the most baby face and you hate that about yourself.
Yeah, I know.
You
I
always
want,
say, anytime
wish.
We call Alicia cute, she like
that's my yeah.
pulls a
never
knife
call
on
me.
Cute.
Trigger word.
But like she is cute. Like your face is so precious.
I have these little, you know, I have these cheeks.
And
these
supple and this round face.
My mom is like, you know, you're gonna be very grateful when you're, you know, getting older. But I'm like, I wanna, you know, sometimes you just wanna be.
I would
no,
feel
no,
that
no,
you
want to
be snatched. I'm not that either.
No,
I'm a
because
big ass cheeks, round face.
Like that's the thing. Everyone's doing this buccal fat bullshit removal.
Oh, I know
buccal. And here's the thing:
is it buccal or is it buccal?
It's more like Buick. You know what I mean? So I'm just thinking
buccal.
Yes, you do.
That
yes, you do.
No,
know
I
what
don't.
I mean.
That can go further explanation.
No, and I that's all there is to it.
Okay,
but I do think it's people just want to look so snatched all the time, like I do. That's how I contour my face.
Trying to be Bianca Lawson. Do you see that lovely black woman? 35 years old playing a high schooler.
Stepsister.
Period.
An iconic woman.
Period.
Who I did try to use her name to get into the gold after party. It didn't work out well.
What do you mean you tried to use her? How'd you?
Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
That's
why.
What are you talking
I'm
about?
Shook.
Anyway,
but wait, going back to women aren't allowed to age.
Yes. I don't like that.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, there's like this whole obsession of looking young and. Well, it kind of goes against with this whole buccal fat removal because, like,
yeah, buccal makes people look old as fuck.
Yeah, so I'm confused. Like, there's this like,
duality. I also, it's like when, well, but no, but it makes sense though, because when you're really young, everyone's sexualized, everyone's over matured.
Yeah.
Girls have way too much makeup on and are being put into this light. And then suddenly, when you're older, you're getting hated for looking older. It's like a weird thing.
I have a weird relationship with it because I do get some work done sometimes. Mm. And it's not really to ever look young. It's more like to look what the trend is, aka like a lot of white women. You know, I've always, I mean, I used to have curly hair. Like when you said the straightening the hair thing, that's what I used to do constantly. And I get my lips done, and I do like my lips, but like, I went to get my lips done, and one of the estheticians was like, you should do something under your eyes. And what about thoughts about doing cheek and chin a little bit? And I was like, I was taken back a little bit, but I was also like, oh, wait, maybe I should do this. And I went home and I was like, I'll think about it.
Yeah.
Not thinking like that goes against so much of my culture as well, because like Arabs are known for their sunken eyes. And like my cheeks, they're already big. Why do I need to make them bigger? And my chin, is it not prominent enough? And it was like, no matter what, as a woman or a female presenting human, you're damned. And it's like, yes, like there can, two truths can exist where I do want to get my lips done, but I don't want
to. You should feel that agency to do whatever makes you feel beautiful, but not to appease other people or pander to beauty standards.
100%.
Speaking of beauty standards, and like you obviously talked about like projects that you've done, and girl, you were a part of like one of the biggest shows of I think like our time. Like I remember being in high school and 13 Reasons coming out.
I was in high school.
I was finishing up high school,
yeah.
How old are you guys?
I'm 24.
I'm 24.
We're like the same age. Oh, okay. Don't do that.
Wait, I was 19.
Yeah, you were. Yeah, why are you talking about that?
I was like, wow, you were in high school.
I was 46.
We just weren't killing it like you, but we were around the same age.
That's so funny.
I was in Orange County at that time.
She literally was like, I was too busy like trying to cheer and run student government. I'm sorry, I was not a star like you, but that makes me want to ask you, how were you dealing with beauty trends and people having all these comments about the work that you were doing at such a young age? Because now, you know, I think we're all still very young.
Yes.
But we're a little bit older.
Yeah.
And we've learned some things. But how is like navigating the industry and navigating like people always having something to say? Because you're on a very large platform.
Right.
So many eyes.
Yeah. One 13 Reasons Why I came out. It was super popular, and it was overnight. It was kind of like the beginning of Netflix, like original. I mean, like it wasn't the beginning because you had, House of Cards, which we're not, you know. Orange is the New Black. Orange is the New Black.
Yeah.
But then, you know, they didn't really have YA, any popular YA original content. And then Stranger Things and 13 Reasons Why came out like within a year of each other, or 2 years, I forgot. And it was this weird thing of all of a sudden I was very visible and I was so young. But I was also personally stepping into my adulthood. Like I was living alone and my friends had gone off to college, and I had to kind of, I felt very lonely at the time, and then I felt highly visible at the time. And I was really depressed for years on that show, not because of the show, but because of just, you know, my personal life. And everyone was commenting on how I looked, and I had gained weight. I had gained maybe like 15, 20 pounds between seasons, which is a lot for like a young teenage girl to have to go through, and then especially in like a highly visible setting. And everyone online just, you know, would call me ugly. I had acne too, and like I would be called,
because you were young, you were a young teenager.
I was like going through my second puberty. I was and I was just like, all of a sudden I had money, I could afford food, I could afford like eating, I could afford like, because I was living in a one bedroom like Santa Monica and Vine apartment before I got this show, like you know having to support myself. But anyway, my body and my face and my like whole life had changed so much, and then everyone was commenting on it. I became even more insecure, and I just became so self-conscious, and I wanted to hide. And I was so hard on myself, and I felt so ugly because I was getting validation from other people.
Yeah.
And I, in turn, just wasn't taking care of my mental health or my well-being. And it started from the outside in. So like how I was presenting outside made me feel mentally unwell. So it was really hard. It's too much for a young girl to go through that. And especially I was, I played a character who had been sexually assaulted. So a lot of my, the parallels of my life of like, my character was going through, you know, feeling out of her body and feeling so out of control with her body, not to compare my personal journey, because there's nothing comparable to sexual assault or being, you know, raped. But it was this, my body was confused because I have to go into work every day. And yeah, then my character is also like, oh, I hate my body. I hate my life. I hate this. And it was just, yeah, I was super young and it was a learning curve. And then I got used to the visibility and I got used to like people. It's just people type things and they forget about that. Nope. I'm not a real person. And I just realized like, oh shit, like,
no, it's not Twitter true. Fingers. Yeah. And like, it's not behind true. A screen. And because yeah, people think that they have agency towards you, yeah, and they have no idea who the fuck you are.
Exactly. You and then I realized like, damn, I'm really cute. And
yeah,
I
was like, God damn, you are fucking cool. You're
hot.
One of the most
every
beautiful
person.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
I'm staring at you right now. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I actually thought about it for a second. I was like, yo, on this video, am I going to look crazy? Because I'm leaning in because I'm just like, you are so stunning and so beautiful.
I love you.
Thank and intelligent. You. But
no, it was a process. It was a process because it was just like, imagine being a teenager and you have to see yourself on screen and then
it's a mind fuck.
Find yourself confidence. It's not, find yourself as like transitioning into womanhood.
Yeah.
And find
in front
that,
of everyone.
In front of
in
everyone.
Front of, speaking of the past work that you've done and the importance and the weight that it's had, it makes me want to think, what are the goals that you have? Mm. Like in regards to projects that you want to do, like are there other goals in the industry or even outside? Like, what do you see yourself? Ugh, I don't want to ask you that because sometimes I get annoyed.
Not in 10 years.
Yeah, I don't want to do give a timeline. But, yes,
but places you want to be in.
Yeah, places you want to be in are intentions that you set for the future years to come.
I'd like to have more control over my career, I think, where in the sense of I'm not, you know, relying on everyone else to give me this job that I need to, yeah, you know, like, yeah, where yeah, it's yeah, like, I'm still like hustling. Like I need to audition and I need to do this and that. I want to be able to have control of the stories that I'm a part of a bit. So I would love to be producers on stories that I really care about and move into that space. I love acting so much that it's just that this is kind of what I want to keep doing. I just want to move into being more, I guess, mindful about the projects and, you know, being, I don't know, I just want to keep working. Those are my
like,
goals.
No, but that's enough.
You know?
And you will. And
yeah,
I remember also another car ride. It was literally one of the last
like car rides.
One of the last days, this is the last car ride that I'll bring up. We were drinking whiskey in the back of this yeah, car ride. Yeah. And you said, and I remember you said, I want to be intentional.
Yes.
This taught me so much. I want to be intentional. Yeah. I want to know what I'm getting myself into. I want to see into the future more when it comes to projects and not just taking them for face value, but
I mean,
really
you guys can relate because we started when we were really young with acting, so like it was
you take what you can get, and it's fun
and you don't even think of it being like yeah, something that you need to decide to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's summer camp with your friends and
exactly
then really quickly
and then you're like, oh, this is a job.
Exactly.
And like, sorry, was that morbid? Yeah. Really quickly, it's just a profession,
but it's a part of it. But yeah, I think also something that it's hard to do for all of us is to remind ourselves how far we've come. And yeah, I know if that girl living in that one bedroom apartment in Santa Monica and Vine was looking at you right
memory
now,
wow,
she would be so impressed by you. I mean, like, you have built so much and you have this beautiful life with like such a great community around you that we have been so blessed to meet. And shout out Moe's. Imagine you're like, he cheated on me this morning. No.
No.
Shout out, we broke up.
Shout out Moe's. Shout out
Sky. I have a new boyfriend,
Sky,
by the way. He's English.
Sorry.
He's still not from this country.
I understand. I have a Scottish girlfriend.
Not
the Italian.
So UK girlies but, over here.
Moe's and Sky and Gideon and all these wonderful people and like, I am just so proud.
Oh yeah, Sky
of you
really wanted a shout out. Hello, Sky Benica.
Hi, Sky.
You're so
cute. I am so proud of you. We are so proud of you and I'm so excited for you to like take the harness of your career and especially just like step into yourself even more. You beautiful fucking woman.
I love you. I love you. And I love you.
I love you.
We love you. Thank you
for letting me into your community, by the way, really quick. All of the barbecues, all of like
always,
and then boils.
Yeah, it's traumatizing. And it's amazing.
We're a lot, but it's like, I knew that before coming
in. I knew.
I remember Josie was telling me. Josie was like, when you meet Alicia, you guys will cause destruction in the world together. And I remember you said that to me, and I was
no one has validated my pain more than Alicia Bell in a quiet cafe with expletives.
Yeah. Is it the cafe in Edinburgh that I went to say hi to the people?
She didn't really frequent Milk as much as I did. But you know what? She was at Milk hanging out with her girlfriend, and then they were talking about me, and the barista came up to her and was like, do you know Josie?
I took a photo,
and no, because she used to go and do work there all the time. Mm-hmm. But they don't have iced coffee there. That's the thing.
Well,
nowhere in Europe.
Yeah,
that's crazy too.
Anyway, we'll go get some ice right now. But mm-hmm. Alicia Bell, When You Finish Saving the World is the name of the movie.
That is the name of the movie.
And where can we see it?
You know what? I'm not sure.
I'm pissed.
I think you can buy it on Amazon now.
Okay. I think so.
Amazon, you know,
she plays a badass, politically conscious character.
Thank you.
Watch all her shit.
Do Revenge on Netflix.
Yes, that one.
We love and look out for this Apple show, which we're unsure what the title is or when it's coming out or if it's coming out.
But watch Josie and Alicia's show.
We have a show coming out.
We do have a show coming out.
Yes, you do.
Yes. We're blessed that they found each other.
Okay. Alicia, we love you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dare We Say is a Crooked Media production.
Caroline Reston is our showrunner, producer, and mommy. And Ari Schwartz is our producer and show daddy. Fiona Pastana is our associate producer, and Sandy Girard is the almighty executive producer.
It's hosted and produced by me, Josie Toda.
And me, Yasmin Hamadi.
And me, Alicia Pascual Peña. Our engineer and editor is Jordan Cantor, and Brian Vasquez is our theme music composer. Our video producers are Matt DeGroot, Narm Melkonian, and Dylan Villanueva, and Mia Kelman.
Lastly, thank you to Jordan Silver, Gabriella Leverett, Jesse McLean, Caroline Haywood, Shayna Hortzman, Daisy Cruz, Danielle Jensen, and Awa Okaladi for marketing the show and making us look so damn good.